Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Friday evening of Trad Tasman Talk. I'm Tim Wilms from The Unshackled. It is 6 p.m. here in Melbourne on this Friday, the 5th of June, 2020.
On the same Friday.
Your sound, I can't hear you now, do I?
Hold on. I'm going to work on that. You have to carry on.
Okay. Well, I might as well just share a thought that this is the only Unshackled Productions show which I host that always starts on time. The Wilms Front and The Uncuckables lately are always at least 2 to 3 minutes late at best. But because you're a father of three and it's 8 o'clock over there, you're on a tight schedule, so start on time and then finish on time.
Exactly. Can you hear me now?
No, there's still, it's not picking up your mic.
Anything at all? Okay. Nothing at all?
We can hear you.
Okay, you can slowly hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I see now. I think one of the children played with the microphone settings.
Although I could hear you in the pre-show.
Yeah, I was using the wrong microphone in the pre-show.
That was my problem. Yep, we can hear you better now.
Very good. Sorry for the technical difficulties, everyone. Well, I didn't say much except that it's 8 p.m. here in Auckland and that it is good to see everyone. And we've got a few people coming into the chat now. And a lot of things have happened this week. So we've got a lot to talk about. So, grab a gin or a whiskey or wine or whatever your favorite alcoholic or non-alcoholic beverage is, and we will have a good show as always.
Our premier, Daniel Andrews, one of his lines has become a political catchphrase now when he was talking about the coronavirus restrictions. He's like, I know plenty of Victorians will be keen to get on the beers. That's gone into the lexicon now. And the demand from Victorians has been, come on, Dan, when can we get on the beers? And we were able to, starting Monday the 1st of June, that's when cafes, restaurants, and pubs were allowed to open with a 20 patron limit, and you had to put your contact details there for COVID tracing purposes. I went out on the first night, Monday, for a bite and a drink, and it was certainly just to get out of the house and kick back with others. It was wonderful.
And I'm sure you put your real name and your real address down in all of the books. Or does your system work a little bit different to ours, where when you go into a store still? Because nothing's changed in the last week here in terms of, official regulations. These stores have all of these sort of sign-in books where you got to put in your name and your phone number and your address, and then people go and steal other people's details, or everybody puts in fake details or draws pictures and the like.
Oh, you don't have to. Where I went, you didn't have to give your address. And the COVID safe app. Remember that app, Australians in the chat? Scott Morrison, our Prime Minister, and Greg Hunt, the Health Minister, every press conference were telling us to download the COVID Safe app, and we don't hear about it anymore or that it's had any success. And you mentioned having to give your name and address when you go into places in New Zealand. I previously said about the COVID Safe app, all it needs is your phone number. You had to register a name, but it could be a pseudonym. So you could just write Big Dick 69er as your username on the COVID Safe app. But
your phones track your location anyway, so they know where you live. They've had some things in the news. At least I've seen all the left-wing protesters now freak out that all of the telecommunications companies are basically tracking them home, and they all know where they all live, who've all been out in public. It's like they've suddenly just figured that one out. We have an app as well in New Zealand, and I'm not even sure if I talked about it last week, but basically you scan a QR code and it's supposed to save that on your phone. They said it's just going to store it on your phone and let you know if there's any issues, but it also gets sent to the Ministry of Health, which they would kind of put in the fine print. And that's on AWS servers in Sydney. So, you know, Jeff Bezos has your COVID-19 tracker details. But as much as it was touted, the, you know, its success, you know, 100,000 people installed it on the first day and so on. They have a total of, as of, where was it, only 2 days ago, they had a total of 446,000 accounts registered with the app. So, well, that's a great success, right? The, you know, that's a huge chunk of New Zealand's 5 million population, but the QR codes have only been scanned 400,000 and, 480,000 times. So that's on average one per person. You know, it's clearly not being used if it's only been scanned once. And there's a lot of complaints from people saying, you know, it doesn't work. If people are standing in queues, they've got to try and get their phone out and do the QR code thing. So it's quite funny that they spend all this time and effort into pushing this out, and now it's a flop and nobody talks about it anymore.
Yeah. Well, that seems like having to actually get out and scan a QR code, that requires a lot of effort. With our COVID safe app, the design was that it would just be Bluetooth pairing with the app in the background. You'd have the Bluetooth on and there'd be a digital handshake. But I've made the point previously that having the Bluetooth on your phone all the time significantly drains the battery. I don't have the app on my phone, but I did have an episode the other day where my, I won't say what type of, oh yeah, I have said before that I have an iPhone. I've already revealed that. But
I know you're part of the Apple.
Mm. Yeah, yeah,
Evil empire.
No, Tim Apple, he's based. He and Trump are good friends.
Yes, Tim Apple and Trump. Yes, yeah, I remember them.
But yeah, so I noticed my battery was draining very quickly, and I was like, "What?" Like, I shut all the background apps and everything, and then I noticed that the Bluetooth was on, and so that was probably it. So I turned it off because I only have the Bluetooth on if I'm trying to connect to one of those Bluetooth speakers, which has become prominent there. So unless they're going to put charging stations everywhere so that you can keep your Bluetooth on all the time, or I don't know, maybe they
can use the 5G cell towers to send power to your phone.
Really?
No, I'm joking. Apparently 5G, I don't know if you've had this in Australia, but they've had you know, a lot of 5G complaints, and apparently a few cell towers were burned in New Zealand.
Yeah, that's
that were 5G.
I heard as
the
well.
The media really pushed that. Yeah, okay, yeah, they really pushed it. It didn't happen until the media reported on it, so they were saying, like, you know, it was London, somewhere in the UK, where they were burning 5G cell towers, and they were reporting on that in the news in New Zealand. And then right on schedule, like the next day, a 5G cell tower gets burned in New Zealand. So it's working perfectly.
Hasn't happened here, despite the media alarm about anti-5G conspiracy theorists. do you know the only local government or authority that has expressed their concerns about 5G?
Is it a woke one?
Yes, it's up on the north coast of New South Wales, where all the green hippies have migrated. Yep. As well. So it's funny the progressive media talk about anti-vaxxer 5G conspiracy theorists, but it's the ultra far left who've migrated to those hippie areas on the north coast of New South Wales, yep, which takes in the city of Nimbin, which I'm not sure if New Zealanders know is the marijuana capital of Australia. so that is the only area where there's been a local government consideration that they want to explore more of the science of 5G before having 5G in the area.
Jacinda had announced this week that she's now finally considering an early move to level one. And level one would be reinvented as well. We didn't really know what level one is. And it's been announced she's, you know, sort of given out 10 golden rules. for that, and I can't remember what any of them are, but I think it's something like be kind and wash your hands, and then 8 other things that sound the same, sort of like her own version of the Ten Commandments that will stay in effect for a very long time.
Well, basically just what your mother tells you.
That's right. That is exactly what is happening in New Zealand. And there was a leaked cabinet paper earlier this week. So the leaky ship of cabinet is still ongoing. There's definitely at least one or possibly 2 or 3 disgruntled people in there. And we were supposed to shift to level 1 when there had been no community transmission for at least 28 days. We haven't had any community transmission 40 or 50 days now. So they, you know, should have shifted us out 2 or 3 weeks ago, basically. And I suspect it's the polling. Are people are enjoying, you know, the restrictions? They're enjoying being told what to do by their mother, Jacinda. And, you know, that seems to be just about the only reason why level 2 is maintained. Mm-hmm. But nobody's actually doing level 2 in New Zealand. We had the, Black Lives Matter solidarity marches on the Monday, and we had at least 2,000 up in Auckland, hundreds in other places, I think maybe up to 1,000 or so in Wellington. No social distancing, no enforcement of it. We've had various other photos surface the next day of the Prime Minister out taking photos, posing for photographs with fans, adoring fans, wanting to be seen with her. For you know, being so thankful that she saved the nation. And then she was confronted by this, and then it was so difficult. Everybody wants my photo. It's difficult to do the social distancing. The Director General of Health had the same issue. He was also pictured with various supporters. So between the protests and our leaders, we have shifted away from any kind of restrictions, so they only remain in name, and there is a few, obviously businesses are still impacted by them, and that's kind of the problem, right? Churches and businesses are the only ones actually following.
Here's the Director of Health here. I've just put it on the screen. Yeah, it doesn't look like 1.5 meters unless it's a bad angle.
That's right. And I see it's premium content there, so you can't see the rest of the images unless you pay the money. But they have been shared elsewhere, especially the ones of Jacinda Ardern. So it's, yeah, there's not much happening with it. Nobody's doing this. Nobody is following this, except for people who potentially could get in some legal trouble or who feel like being goody two shoes, which happens to be all of the businesses and churches who for some reason feel more bound by the rules that nobody else needs to follow.
Yeah, it's basically now just the lawfare is the only real deterrent for businesses and people. But hey, if you can gather 2,000 people plus, then the mob rules, and you don't need to follow the rules that everyone else has been living by. I will just remind people that Trad-Tasman Talk, we simulcasted on both the Unshackled and Right Minds YouTube channel. There's no DLive feed for this. The Unshackled channel is monetized. So if you're in the Unshackled YouTube chat, if you want to send a super chat, you can press the dollar sign there, type your message and amount, and we'll read it out on the show.
And I have a question here about the book in the background, which is a good topic to get to now, actually. Economics in One Lesson by Henry Hazlitt. And we are going to be talking a little bit about the Black Lives Matter marches obviously started in America, that we had here in New Zealand and in Australia, which basically is the thing that vaporized COVID-19. It displaced the whole narrative of COVID has been displaced by this new narrative. And that's what we're going to be talking about. And there's obviously a lot of economic impacts of that. And an entire chapter of the book behind me is actually relevant to the situation.
I've been saying that the riots have helped fast-track herd immunity. That's why nobody's worried about it anymore. I've also got another seminal text with me, mugged by Ann Coulter, which she published about racial demagoguery or racial politics and division from the 70s to Obama. It was published in 2012, in the year of Obama's re-election, and basically chronologued how since we got a black president, race is all we talk about. And since 2012, obviously, race relations have deteriorated even further. 2016, that's when Black Lives Matter was born. And of course, 2020, they're back. And now the rioters are explicitly saying, fuck the white people, kill all white people. So Ann Coulter, she probably needs to write a sequel, but a lot of her books now, they're going to be the classics of the 21st century. Her book, Adios America, about the demographic change in the United States from the southern border, that inspired partly Trump's election promise to build the wall.
And that is quite clearly the case there, and they've had a little bit of a falling out since then. But she was the big supporter behind Trump's, you know, one of the early supporters, if not the first supporter behind his campaign, and the simple messaging, you know, of building the wall is something that she helped to pioneer, along with several others. Michelle Malkin is someone that we've talked about before, and by my own favorite Canadian, Mark Stein, similarly has been championing that cause for a long time, along with those others that we've already mentioned.
Ann Coulter, I would say that she's holding him to account. She's not a cheerleader. She wants him to fulfill his promises. So that's where she's coming from, and she is she is correct. But she also, if you've seen her on the PBS current affairs show Frontline, where she talks about even if the Trump presidency is a big joke, as she calls it, that he is the only politician who has run on popular issues, picked this $1,000 bill off the ground, yeah, to win the election. No other politician has done that, which even if that's the only story from Trump's presidency, it's still a historical precedent.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, you know, he took that one issue into the field when it was gone, and he completely brought it up. He took that one issue all the way through to the White House, and clearly huge amounts of resistance the whole way. And whether it's going anywhere is hard to tell. The wall itself is being built. Wonderful videos of that out there. Obviously, illegal border crossings are down. We even brought up the irony, may have been several months ago now, of COVID-19, the explosion of it in America actually helped to deter illegal border crossings. And so border crossings dropped dramatically during the coronavirus crisis. And it seems to be sort of a, you know, feed through into these other issues that now we're talking about, the police brutality case in the United States with George Floyd being most likely was being
coronavirus.
Was probably murdered by that cop. Although we'll see what happens with that case. And in that's indeed because he tested positive for coronavirus prior. And, you know, sort of in that certain sense, it all comes together. The lawlessness, the lack of order and the coronavirus issue. And it's all tied into the borders as well. And quite a fascinating build up, quite a fascinating ramping up. And I heard somebody say today that this is probably just the beginning for 2020. You know, people say, oh, this is, you know, it keeps getting worse or better, depending on your diabolical point of view. The 2020 is the year where all of these things are coming to a head and likely will continue to. And I don't expect things to get better in the sense that things will be calmer.
People have been speculating, okay, we've had the pandemic, now there's the race riots. What can possibly be next? Alien invasion? It is 2020 election year. Maybe Kang and Kodos from The Simpsons will occupy Trump and Biden's body, since everyone says that The Simpsons predicted everything.
I have seen some comparisons to the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse as well. So we've had pestilence, and now we're getting war, and so the next thing is famine. So keep famine on your radar as well.
Well, there's the locust that has gone through Africa and is now in Iran, and there were those murder hornets that were heading towards the United States as well.
They weren't scary enough, though. They didn't really threaten people, they were kind of disappointing, you know, because their effects are not direct enough to be able to generate a proper narrative out of, where you could run that for days on end and make huge stories about it. It kind of did the memes and then fizzled out. But if we get if we get enough murder hornets where they start, say, threatening a human population somewhere, then you may see that story come back. So certainly possible.
Yeah, all of our supermarkets are full again. So late stage capitalism. That was another fizzer. If you go shopping in any of our supermarkets, there's an abundance of everything again. Even toilet paper.
Yeah, capitalism failed, but only for about a month, which was due to the arrival of communism in New Zealand and Australia. I don't really see the whole BLM and the protests going anywhere, in particular because it's not really about race, which is what's supposed to motivate the protests is racial injustices. But what you have is cases of police brutality, and then you have it broken down into now riots, which don't help help them at all.
We should update our audience. They do seem to have come to an end now, this is according largely to the mainstream media, and now there's just peaceful demonstrations, commemorations.
It's been peaceful all along, Tim. I don't know what you're talking about.
Of course.
But at the same time, they have the apocalypse. So they have the two things going on, which is either there's peaceful protests, and B, there's riots everywhere, and America is burning. Mm. And those two narratives are running in parallel there. But in reality, there are very few places that are burning. Right, it's the downtown areas of some of these major cities, which are all controlled by liberals. These are ultra progressive areas. And the only people who are actually affected by this, and that is the racial component in the sense, is largely the poorer people, and especially in the area with higher African American populations, those are the places getting burnt to the ground. They can't actually go to where the white liberals live, because the white liberals are all protected by private security forces with guns. They don't really rely on the police anyway. And then all of the conservative areas, you've got the all of the men with their AR-15s standing, lined up outside their neighborhoods.
Why would you need a gun? Why would you need an AR-15 assault rifle? I mean,
while a lot of what you hear coming out of the protests is race based and is our racial narratives, where it's sort of a black versus white. In reality, it's these poor neighborhoods that get affected, burned to the ground, that are disrupted, and the conservatives that are able to defend themselves, they are unaffected, and usually these people live together, especially in America. It's actually a highly self-segregated country where people, create communities, especially in these areas, gated communities, which is where all the white liberals live, and they all have private security. So on the whole, people are unaffected by it, except for the people who are the most vulnerable for this, the poorer people. They're being pulled back. So the ones who are running businesses, who are trying to be successful, they're getting their businesses burnt down. The Walmart doesn't care. They've got billions of dollars. If the local Walmart gets burnt down, it's fine, as long as the competition gets burnt down too.
They've got the upper hand. Target, no problem. And Nike got looted as well. I came up with the new slogan for Nike, believe in something, even if it means sacrificing your store to looters.
But It's funny, but also to them, it doesn't matter. They've got the money. They can afford this. They probably have insurance that covers it. And as long as their competition is run out of town, they're big winners. So same thing with Amazon, Target, Walmart, all of these large stores. It's not really a big deal for them. So they're going to be as woke as they can be because it's good for business being woke. Even if it means sacrificing the occasional store to looters, they still make money in the long run.
And you've got to
And
think
it's
of
the
the
local people who
workers of
correct.
those Target stores. They're obviously not going to be able to go to work for a while if their store's been looted, and they're
Exactly.
not on really good money. So again, it's those ordinary people who are being disadvantaged by these business destruction, even the big ones.
And in terms of the demands of the protesters and the peaceful ones with good intentions, there's no real demands there. They demand justice.
Oh,
And well, I mean, when's
they
the
want to
last time you
abolish
see
the
justice?
police now.
Well, that's the new thing, right? Okay, abolish the police. A, that's not going to happen. It doesn't matter if they want to abolish the police. Right, that's a non-starter. They want justice. I don't know about America, but in New Zealand, when's the last time you've seen justice in New Zealand? When's the last time the legal system has delivered something, has delivered a verdict on any case where you could look at that and say, oh yeah, that was justice? And I suspect in many cases in America, even George Floyd himself, who, this doesn't justify his killing, of course, but he had a rap sheet as well. I mean, did his victims, his prior victims, did they ever get justice?
Well, that
Who
doesn't
knows? It's
justify a
unlikely. It's
cop
very, no, it definitely does not
standing.
justify it. What happened to him?
I don't think it makes a
But
difference
on the
in this
whole, no, it doesn't
situation.
make exactly. And I wanted to point that out after this as well. But if you picking any other case, how often is justice actually served? And so, is there, are these people looking for genuine reforms to make to the justice system to have actual justice? And there's no call for that from the leadership. So there's no real change. So this is just the system itself letting off some steam with the marches and the protests, just letting off steam, and then that's and then everything goes back to normal. And then we come back in 2 years or 3 years or 10 years, and we talk about the same thing over again because it doesn't change. So I've seen some people in the comments here on Right Minds talking about Candace Owens' video and so on, and there are plenty of African Americans in America who really don't like Black Lives Matter. Although I, as an organization, I've seen an interview by their founder. This was probably a couple of years ago. I was actually interviewed by a conservative, and they had a really good chat. And he seemed like a really nice, genuine guy who wanted actual, actual improvements. But the movement as a whole doesn't seem to be heading in that direction to actually get.
When the mob takes over, it's the same with the founder of Greenpeace. He doesn't like what the organization has become now.
And so, and getting back to what you said before about none of this justifies what happened to George Floyd, and that's that is definitely not something I wanted to undermine. Is that what happened to him is absolutely unjustifiable. I know there's many people who want to do that and say, oh well, there was this circumstances and that circumstances. Now, that doesn't justify having a cop kneel on you for 7 minutes. Nothing that he was doing at the time would justify any of that. And the same thing has happened to plenty of other people throughout America. It's a regular thing. They have a serious issue with police brutality. But again, abolishing the police, that's not an achievable goal. Dealing with the issues as to why they have a militarized police force, why these police are trained to take incredibly aggressive stances, and they get a lot of American police forces train with the Israelis, for instance, which in the Israeli policing context, they have to deal with insurrection, right? They can make a little bit more sense as to why they are more aggressive there. You don't want to bring that into America. And same thing, I mean, we've had cases that we've talked about on the show in the past about the Chinese police coming and training Australia, New Zealand police. Are we going to have the same thing here? I mean, the Chinese police are excellent at repression when it comes to rounding up people into camps. I mean, that's the Chinese police are great at that. That's not something you want to bring into New Zealand. And the same thing for America. That's what they bring into the American police forces, and that's not what police are supposed to be for. Especially if you're having a harmonious functioning society, the police should be there to, on the surface, there to maintain order and They should be using force, as a last resort and as minimally as possible. And it's not a case where you have what has essentially become in America and many other Western countries now, which is copying, these dictatorships from the Middle East or China, or even countries that struggle more with violent insurrection. You bring that into your country, well, that's the police. It doesn't matter who escalates, but that's what's going to happen. You're going to escalate on both sides, and you end up with huge amounts of police brutality, and then you end up with more violence in the streets as well. They respond, right? So, police brutality increases, riots ensue, and on it goes. So that's just the tragic outcome, right? Is BLM actually calling, are they looking at any of the root issues? Are they looking at root issues in case of, why do African Americans have more interactions with the police?
I don't, that's not even, crime rates? That's not even that's got not to do with the issue of police brutality either, because this is not the first time that the Minneapolis Police Department has killed someone. There was a, well, he was, it was actually a Somali American cop shot dead in 2017, Justine Ruskulik, an Australian woman, newlywed, who was living in Minneapolis, called the police because she thought there was a dangerous intruder in a neighborhood. And when she was about to approach, she was shot dead. And that was a black cop shooting a white blonde woman. And so clearly there is a problem, period, with the Minneapolis Police Department. Yep.
And we talked about this last week, where one of the Democrat candidates, was the senator,
Amy Klobuchar. Joel Jamal on Wednesday night. He said that although she's been a district attorney in Minneapolis, she actually did not deal with this police officer who's now being charged with secondary murder. But she was part of the system in that city
at the time. Yeah. So whoever was in charge of the prosecutions at the time, they didn't prosecute the police. American police essentially have immunity to prosecution in a large scale that we don't have in Australia or New Zealand, where largely the police are treated like they're above the law and they have immunity for their actions. And that's just crazy. I'm seeing in the chat here, I don't know if this is breaking news, but it's saying Minneapolis has just announced the abolition of its police force. That may actually be a good thing.
I'll double check
if we
that.
We can verify that one. And something that they have in America with their local police force, so they have sheriffs where they are elected by the people. They actually represent the people, and I suspect they have much better policing outcomes there than in the big cities. These liberal utopias, these Democrat utopias, seem to have the worst police forces. But to go back to the issue that I was talking about before, which is not directly related to police brutality, but it's a case of they said, black people are targeted by the cops more often, and then people come back and say, well, like, you know, they're 50 just over 50% of the crime overall is committed by African Americans. But what's the closest correlation is in poverty, right? A greater number of them live in poverty, and that's the closest correlation between crime, usually between having an interaction with the police, is poverty. So if you control, regardless of ethnicity, the poorer people are, the more crime tends to be involved. What's
those,
their solutions for poverty? They don't talk about poverty, and then there's no issue of addressing the poverty. There's no issue addressing fatherless families, the breakdown of traditional family, the removal of values, you could go on. Maybe on, and I'm bringing these things up now, but that's not something they're discussing. I'm bringing these up because these are things that are not going to get fixed. So we can talk about this now, but we're going to be back, and we're going to be talking about this whenever in a few years when it happens again.
I've seen the graphs which point out the black on white or black on black crime, like from conservative pages, like that is irrelevant to this. And it's also unhelpful as well, because it's going to be interpreted that you're you're somehow excusing it, or basically...
And it becomes a side. You have to take a side, and so social media and the kind of drive is there's two sides, and you got to pick a side, and it's that side versus the other side. And I agree with you, absolutely. I've been seeing that stuff the whole past week, and I just think it's absolutely not helpful unless, okay, you want to talk about underlying social issues, but talk about the underlying social issues and don't just throw graphs around to say, okay, well, you know, it's not helpful unless you're talking about the problems. Nobody wants to talk about the problems right now. So it's best to just keep quiet. That's actually what I've done outside. I'm talking about it on the show here, but in case of Facebook, I've not posted anything. I've not really commented on anything because there's no point. Right, just stay silent. There's no need to pick a side in that sense because neither of them are actually going to get anywhere because there are no solutions. So you're wasting your time.
Now going back to the importation of Black Lives Matter to the Tasman nations, and it's worth making the point again that aren't these people the same ones who don't like the Americanization of a culture, yet they're importing an American political movement here and applying to them to a different race of people? Yeah. Yes, they are the Aboriginal people of Australia and the Maori people of New Zealand are of a darker skin, but they're different from the African race.
But again, the reason they bring it here is because in terms of outcomes with the police, which is perhaps more what drives it, it's a case of the Marxist revolution, which is not even that is not going to get anywhere. But that's basically it's the whole thing of the oppression culture. That's the bit that they're importing. And that's what they're after. So it's not really, doesn't really have anything to do about with race specifically. It's why they apply it to themselves,
It's a form of divide and conquer a communist revolution. Yeah. One of the Sydney Black Lives Matter rallies tomorrow is organised by the Australian Communist Party. I mean, it's that obvious. Yeah. And the Melbourne one is organised by the Warriors of the Aboriginal Resistance. Yeah. Which is in the name, they to this day resisting European settlement to Australia. Yeah. They still believe that they're resisting, and we all
but the end result is still the same because they're LARPing. They're sort of trying to hijack this movement and apply it here. They get to have a big rally and they get to have the big numbers, and then it all fizzles out and it's gone because there's no real. There's no revolution happening. It's just the system itself is allowing this to happen to let off steam. Essentially, that's the only thing that's really happening. And then we come back and we do it all over again in a few years.
Whether it's a Aboriginal justice rally or a climate justice rally, you will see the communist flag there.
Yeah, it's the same people.
There was on Tuesday night, there was a Black Lives Matter protest in Sydney attended by a couple of thousands, no social distancing, no enforcement of it, but there were the communist flags visible. And on Tuesday, our Victorian Police Minister, Lisa Neville, she was interviewed by Neil Mitchell on 3AW, our most popular talkback radio station. This is direct quotes from her. If you've got 10,000 people there, this is the people who said they'd come or were interested on Facebook at the time, which of course we know they're not all going to come. It is impossible to start doing infringements. And then she said in the same interview, if you've got 100 people at a pub, because we have a limit of 20 at the moment, absolutely, they'll police be there enforcing it, which is again, giving in to the mob. And Victoria Police, they said...
Same in New Zealand. New Zealand Police, basically word for word, same quotes from New Zealand Police Commissioner. Yeah.
Now, the Victorian government and the police have come under sustained political pressure for these contradictory positions because Australians on a whole have been happy to accept these restrictions in the name of the greater good, but... What has really pissed them off is if there's not if they're not equally imposed or enforced. For example, when the restrictions were being implemented, footage was showed from Sydney Airport when they were coming in from the international terminal. No social distancing enforced, and so Australians were like, "Hey, hang on, you're asking us to have all these sacrifices here, but look at the highest risk people just coming in with no screening." And soon after that's when the borders were shut completely. Only residents and citizens were allowed in, and they were in a mandatory isolation for 14 days. And the same has happened here, that you're going to regulate these small business owners who are already doing it tough, but you're timid when it comes to these far-left Marxist extremists. And so Victoria Police have now said that if the rally breaches social distancing and limits on gatherings, they're going to fine the organisers at least. They're not going to issue on-the-spot fines, but obviously they have an idea of who they are and are going to issue them with $1,652 fines. And when, like I said, when I'm advocating that things need to be applied equally, it's not because I support these restrictions, is that if you're going to have restrictions, they apply to all.
Exactly, and these protesters have basically vaporized the restrictions. I'm really glad that's the case, but it's not really the case, because guess what? The restrictions are still in place, in a sense, for everybody else. Will they possibly be enforced for everyone else? The New Zealand police have clearly stated that they will start by educating or informing. So you won't get fined straight away. You won't get in trouble straight away if you're breaking these protocols. So it is actually fine for anybody to do what they've done without getting in trouble in New Zealand. It's just that most people either are too afraid to, or, you know, too respectful, too
you're
nice.
You're not sheep shaggers in New Zealand. You're sheepool.
That is sadly where we're at. Yes. So yeah. In many places where I've seen social distancing has completely disappeared, where I'm walking around in public, there's no social distancing. Nobody's doing it. And again, the police have, like I said, the police basically said, no, we're not going to be enforcing it. So, I mean, only if they start giving you three warnings or so, only then will you be at risk of a fine. So, it is genuinely at that case where only the people who are afraid or have to be afraid, for instance, the businesses where, you know, you can get warned 3 days in a row and you're in trouble, they're the ones that are going to follow the restrictions. That's it.
And also because they're an easy target as well, they're going to be a compliant.
Yeah,
which
absolutely.
Is
yeah.
The common problem with modern policing. They only police infringements which are easy to enforce and people comply with them.
Yeah.
But organized crime or violent home invasion gangs, that's a bit more difficult.
Yeah, and crime levels are higher, and there's a risk of them higher, especially when if they start to let's say they had gone after the march in Auckland. Yeah, 2,000 people there. They specifically stated they had fears of tension, especially if cops tried to break this up, which is genuinely the case, right? They could have had a riot on their hands. They could have had, you know, the heaps of crime come out of this. If they'd committed tons of policing resources, then there's plenty of crime elsewhere that would go unpunished because they never have enough resources to follow up on anything. These are all great reasons, except, you know, they are out. They do seem to have the most awkward times to go out and harass different people, and they seem to be able to, you know, check up on various other activities and support various other questionable checkpoints and so on that we had up and down the country 2 months ago. And so, yeah, the way that they balance these resources, you've got to ask yourself, is it political to an extent? It has to be. That really is the way it is. And the real, if we break it down to, like, why have these marches in New Zealand? Why import this American event into New Zealand? We actually saw it at one of these protests in Auckland because a Polynesian Christian school teacher turned up at this rally, actually saying he supported the rally, or at least he was there He posted a video later. He wasn't really a big fan of Black Lives Matter anyway. He thought that they were, you know, sort of a racist organization that was far left.
Police brutality.
But he was against the police brutality. He said he was against what happened to George Floyd, and that was something he was very clear about. And but he was wearing a Make America Great Again hat, and that's when the true nature of the protest was revealed, because he was harassed. They said, you know, they blamed him for antagonizing them and threatening them and making them angry. Why does the red hat? Why does the statement "Make America Great Again" make them angry?
I thought that provocation was it a defense to assault?
No, and they took his hat. He shoved him around. They took his hat. They lit it on fire, and they, you know, held up the pictures of the burnt hat. So they destroyed his property, they harassed him, and then they tried to, you know, ruin his life. They went after his family and his church and his employer. And as far as I know, they're still harassing him, although it's, I believe it has thankfully died down a little bit
so
now.
They don't care about and that's his the black life.
And that's the true nature of what the protests are about. It's a political protest that's against anti-Trump, anti-police, anti-American, probably anti-white for many of these people as well. And that's essentially what they're after, right? That's the true nature of the protest. It's a political statement and a political protest, and they're after a political revolution. And are they actually interested in black lives? Not really. There are plenty of other black lives that are lost every single year in many other cases that don't result in protests. There's nobody speaking out against these far greater injustices. Not that you have to speak out against everything to be involved in one, but the fact that these protests we're only seeing these protests for this specific event here tells you all that you really need to know about and then their reaction to when they've got even the slightest little bit of political dissent, which if it were a non-political rally that would be okay. That's when the true colors shine through. This teacher was harassed. Like I said, it's important. He worked at a Christian school, which I think is very important in why he retained his job and why he got so much support. That shows how important it is for us to have our own education system, to support our own Christian schools. And that's something I've mentioned several times on the show and in other places as well. Always when I get the chance, tell people, support your Christian schools, support any conservative institution you can find. Please support it if you get the chance, because that's really what they're after. They're after destroying any semblance of conservatism, any semblance of tradition. That's what they want to destroy. That's what they want to overthrow.
And a lot of the people promoting these Black Lives Matter rallies in Australia on the weekend are the same people a week ago who were the lockdown lovies, who fully endorsed the house arrest and mocked the anti-lockdown protesters and said they're all anti-vaxxers, 5G conspiracy theorists, and we're glad that Victoria Police were barking at them and manhandling them, which basically shows that they don't support free speech or free assembly across the board. It's only what they deem to be acceptable form of speech, and they believe that this type of rally is an essential service. The chief health officer of Victoria, Brett Sutton, even though he's working for a far left suck up to the Communist Party of China, Dan Andrews, his advice on coronavirus itself has been very measured, and he urged people not to attend the protest on health grounds. And the police minister, Jenny Mikovits, said that the reason a lot of these restrictions have been so tough is to protect vulnerable communities, including the Indigenous communities. So you're encouraging Indigenous people to come to these Black Lives Matter events. They'll be in close proximity with other people, because the chief medical officer today, Professor Brenda Murphy, said that was one of our biggest concerns and priorities for protecting remote Indigenous communities in the Northern Territory and WA. So if Black Lives do matter, then you shouldn't encourage this community to gather then.
And it comes back to what I said 5 minutes ago, is that it's not about Black lives. And that is just clearly the case, right? And especially some of these big riots were in New York City.
Mikarkos, PC Lex Peters said, that's how it's pronounced. He's Greek, so he knows how to pronounce it.
Right. Very good. But yeah, it places like America, like New York City, over 50% of all black babies are murdered in the womb. So the scale on which black lives don't matter in these places in America and here in New Zealand and all over the world. Clearly, the hypocrisy is there, and they don't care either. Yes, there are genuine people, like I said, especially the founder of Black Lives Matter, who seem to be a genuine guy. Plenty of supporters and people who support them because they think it's about a worthy cause. You dig a little bit deeper, you see the way they act. You see the kind of things they call for, such as abolishing police forces and so on, and you see the black lives they don't care about, such as black police officers, black business owners, black babies. They are happy to discard all of these in service of the greater cause that they serve, which is that deep Marxist progressive agenda.
Well, they destroyed and looted black businesses in Minneapolis, and even murdered a retired black police officer. So that just got over in the United States. So that just shows, it's not about Black Lives Matter. We'll read out these super chats before we go to some of the latest economic responses to the coronavirus. Red Foreman Bear has sent through $5. Thank you so much. How much does Trump's success or failure mean to ANZACs, Israel, etc.? Well, I think we answered that when we said that he has shown that running on a populist platform is a winner, even if you have the entire mainstream media and political establishment against you.
And he, in terms of keeping China at bay, in terms of his authority on the world stage, he actually plays a very important role there here in Australia and New Zealand. And a right-wing blog here, well, right-wing, sort of or centre-right, slightly right of left of centre blog in New Zealand, ran a poll asking its readers which victory is more important. Is the National Party victory more important? Is Trump's victory more important at this year's election? And it was actually pretty well split between people who said, it's maybe if we end up with Trump in America and then Jacinda Ardern re-elected in New Zealand, that perhaps is a more satisfactory outcome than having Joe Biden in America and Todd Muller in New Zealand. The importance that the American presidency plays on the world stage and affects, our economies here and social discourse here in our own countries is actually to a great extent sometimes almost as important as who our own leaders are. Not that that is, of course, unimportant, but it seems like, for instance, especially here in New Zealand, we're going to end up with Jacinda Ardern as Prime Minister for 3 years. It would definitely actually be to our advantage to have Trump in America. It would be not the most ideal outcome at the end of the day, but at least we will still get some small benefit from that here in New Zealand.
And Kieran Paldrell has sent through $5 New Zealand dollars. Thank you so much. I saw that. I can see in the YouTube studio that it translates directly to $4.60 Australian dollars. So our dollar is still stronger.
We were ahead of you for 1 day 2 months ago, and since then, Scott Morrison has clearly done better by the economy than Jacinda Ardern, who's run the New Zealand dollar into the ground.
His super chat is, Dewey DeBoer no longer has the best beard out of the new conservative candidates. Jim Taylor has the best beard. Tim needs to grow a beard. No, I won't.
Jim Taylor is the candidate for Whangarei, I believe, and that I think might be his electorate as well. So I do agree, his beard is pretty epic. And yes, I do agree that Tim needs to grow a beard, but he's going to give his usual
thoughts. Yeah, I've got the mullet going. That's my thing.
Get rid of the mullet, grow a beard.
Nah. The mullet's more my style than the beard.
So, very good. Thank you for those super chats. You've got another 5 or 10 minutes to send a couple more if you want them, and we'll wrap up with a few economics cases before we bring the show to a close.
We had to get us through the pandemic. The programs from the Morrison government were Job Seeker and Job Keeper. There are a lot of problems with Job Keeper that employees of certain companies got them. It didn't apply to all workers who'd stood down. Last week at the National Press Club, Scott Morrison announced that he was moving into a job maker phase of initiatives. And this is sort of the thing why he's called Scotty from marketing, because it always has this name. And he's perpetuated that to the people that called him, already call him that, with his new program called Home Builder. And this is the fact sheet of FAQ. Home Builder provides eligible owner occupiers, including first home buyers, with a grant of $25,000 to build a home or substantially renovate an existing home. Home Builder will assist the residential construction market by encouraging the commencement of new home builds and renovations this year. So it's a form of economic stimulus to the construction industry, which I've spoken to people in the construction industry, and they said, what? We haven't had an economic downturn. And if you have a look at the eligibility, or you have to be a natural person, so not a company or trust, age 18 or over, Australian citizen, you meet one of the following income caps: $125,000 per annum for an individual applicant, $250,000 for a couple. You enter a building contract between June 4 and 31st of December. And if it's modifying it, the contract is between $150,000 and $750,000, and where the value of your existing house and land does not exceed $1.5 million. It's not applicable to luxury renovations such as pool tennis courts or pool sheds. But I've explained the highly strict criteria. That I don't think many people are going to be able to kickstart building or renovating a home in 6 months, and you basically only can benefit from it if the stars align for you in the next 6 months, which is that's not a very good government program in my view.
No, and maybe if you've got a little bit of luck, the your protests over the weekend, they'll result in some riots, and they'll burn down the downtown of your major cities, and then the building industry will be stimulated.
Yeah, so some Keynesian economics.
And that's the what the book was about. I talked about it at the beginning of the show. I can now drop it in the last 2 minutes. But there's an entire chapter in there on the broken window fallacy, and that kind of is, in fact, one of the opening arguments that Hazlitt makes is he discusses the broken window fallacy and how it doesn't work, and that's pretty much what we're seeing in action as well with the with the economic devastation from coronavirus. Now it's suddenly like, oh yeah, we're going to stimulate the economy and make work for this and that and the other thing. And in reality, you're always going to be running a loss when that happens.
Yeah. By that logic, the broken window fallacy, that spilling red wine on your white carpet, that stimulates the economy because you've got to replace the carpet.
Exactly. Mm.
Though it's funny that many homemakers have not seen it that way when red wine is filled on the white carpet.
No, because obviously it's a fallacy. It's fake. But that seems to be what a lot of the modern liberal economics seems to run on. And that, sadly, does infect the attitudes our own governments have as well. So.
Because the government's only got two options to stimulate the economy: borrow it from the bond market, so using other people's money that they have to pay back, or just printing money via the Reserve Bank, which steals the wealth from other people.
Yeah, and that's exactly, they're doing both of those at the moment in New Zealand, and I suspect those are the two options they're following in Australia as well. So no winners there. Well, the big government always wins.
And we also had announced that there'll be tighter tests for foreign investors through our Foreign Investment Review Board, which I think everyone admits now has been a toothless tiger. So Scott Morrison announced this with Josh Frydenberg. The Treasurer will have new powers, including the right to forcibly divest a previously approved purchase under an overhaul of the foreign investment regime designed to safeguard national security. And of course, they don't have one country in mind when they're implementing this policy, or when they were planning it out, there wasn't one country in mind.
No, the country that shall not be named.
Yeah, because and this is because I've spoken previously about Daniel Andrews signing Victoria up through a memorandum of understanding to China's Belt and Road program. Well,
and we are part of New Zealand. Whole of New Zealand is part of Belt and Road.
but we had a few years back the Northern Territory government, which, because it's a territory, the federal government can override anything, but it gave a 99 lease on the Port of Darwin to a Chinese-owned company. And for historical perspective, bombing of Darwin by the Japanese in World War II, that's like the first line of... Darwin was like the first line of defense for Australia.
The first foothold. If there's an invasion from the north, that's exactly where they're coming first.
So there's always been a lot of concern about that. I don't know whether these powers can be the Treasurer can be retrospective, but it is certainly I think it's designed to prevent asset leases like this in the future.
And that is, I think, going to be a very important aspect of foreign policy of Australia, New Zealand, and any of the rest of the Western nations. We're seeing the UK tighten up on their stance towards China as well. So that's really where the next foreign policy debate is going to be. So I do have one more request from the chat before we close off the show. Apparently, I butchered the pronunciation of Whangarei. If I was that better? I need to.
I'm terrible at pronunciation. It's
Whangarei, and that's Whangarei, right?
I don't have a the big TV networks, they have their presenter has a producer which teaches them the elocution before the show, and so they practice a few times pronouncing which I try to do, but when you're on air, you just like blank and you can't pronounce it. And obviously
the chat has told me I'm getting there. They've been trying to distract me the whole time. There've been various conversations there that I won't read out unless they were super chats. But they absolutely, my chat has not been very nice to me, Tim. This show, they've been trying to drag my attention away into their petty little matters like my pronunciation.
Uh-huh. And just one last bit of news, which broke a couple of hours ago, that the NRL, which commenced last weekend on May 28th, the AFL will resume in Melbourne on June the 11th. Victoria, we've got our next set of restrictions to be relaxed June 22nd, when cinemas and gyms can reopen. Venue capacity is increased to 50. The New South Wales government is now going to allow the NRL to have crowds again, as long as there's social distancing, because when they were in our relaunch last week, they had Fork's simulated crowd noise in their broadcasts.
At least they didn't go full South Korean and put sex dolls in the audience. So,
and I heard that in one of the, I can't remember what it was, but in one of the fake crowds, there was some like serial killer they put like a dummy of.
I did see some outrage about that from Australia as well. Yeah, they just.
Oh yeah, it was the fan section like at the NRL. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's the absolute bizarre obsession with sports, and the fact that that they have to have fake crowds is just something I'll never understand, and I'm not going to try to understand it. It is something that will remain enigmatic to me,
because all sitcoms now use genuine audience reaction laughter. There's no more canned laughter, so I don't see why they couldn't even like set up some sort of mega Zoom session of fans reacting in real time and just do the audio mixing.
Yeah, who knows? Don't give them any ideas. That'll be the next thing. All right, we are running over time now, so we shall wrap up the show on that note, I think, and we've had a good run at it this evening. A lot of busy stuff this week, and I think we're going to have a lot more busy weeks this year, especially since there's only about 3 months left before the voting starts for the New Zealand election.
Yes, well, I know it looks now to be a formality, but I know it's highly improbable.
A week is a long time in politics.
Yeah. Never say never in politics. It's not over until it's over, because, well, May 18, 2019, we had the election miracle, so.
So, very good. So, you can find more of me on rightminds.nz, although I haven't been writing much recently. Obviously, with the recent disturbances in everybody's schedules, things have changed quite a bit in my life. And so I trying to go and get back into writing more stuff. But you will at least find me back here every Friday at 8 p.m. New Zealand time.
Tell your team to stop bickering and nitpicking, and produce something of their own.
I will pass that message on.
And of course, continuing to publish news, essays, and history content on the unshackled.net. And of course, I'll be back next week, Wilmsfront, 7:30 p.m. Melbourne time, on YouTube and DLive. Uncuckables, 8:30 p.m. Melbourne time, on the show YouTube and DLive channel. So there is still a lot of activity happening, and as I've said on my own show, I'm now permanently broadcasting from my new home studio. In the age of social distancing and remote broadcasts, it didn't serve much purpose anymore to have a dedicated studio, which means we're going to save quite a bit, which we're going to keep in a rainy day fund or investment fund, and
just shares, Bitcoin shares, gold,
which we'll reinvest in better production equipment, or maybe some further web development, redeploy, as they say, redistribute, restructure. That's the buzzword.
Very good. Thank you, everyone. Hit likes and subscribe if you haven't subscribed to the either of our channels. And that's all for tonight. And thank you for watching. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, stay safe from the coronavirus and big government. And let's hope that there's not a communist wave of the coronavirus from this weekend.
Stay safe. Stay free.